Hello and welcome to Addiction Talk, and joining us for another impactful episode, my guest tonight, you will recognize him as soon as you hear his name and you see his face. It is Cameron Douglas. Let's take a look at his story. Cameron Douglas is an actor and the son of Hollywood legend Michael Douglas. He is also the author of the number one Amazon bestseller, Long Way Home, an unflinching account of his dangerous descent into years of substance use, crime, and prison, and his rise to recovery. Cameron battled heroin and cocaine addiction for years and even resorted to drug dealing to support his habit. Today, he shares the inspiring story of finding his way back home. Addiction Talk starts now. And we are joined now by Cameron Douglas. Cameron, where are you joining us from tonight?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, where the weather, I'm sure, is really nice right about now.
It is. It's beautiful. How's the weather? Where are you?
Well, I am here in Nashville, and it is nice here, too. We've been having cold weather and warm weather, so it is great to be able to bring you on all the way from sunny California.
Absolutely. We're happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Joy.
Well, first, you know, one of the things when I heard about your story, Cameron, is that I had to tell your story because it is so impactful. And my hope is tonight that someone that is listening, a family member or someone who's in the throes of addiction, will hear what you went through and overcame and where you are now, and it will inspire them to not give up, which I think is so important for so many people right now. So first, I want to go back, starting with your childhood. Tell me about your childhood. I mean, we saw there that you are, of course, the son of Michael Douglas, Hollywood legend. But what was it like for you growing up? Tell me about that.
I grew up in a loving household. My mother was quite young when she had me. I think she was 20 or so. And my father's career was sort of just getting going. So they both had a lot on their plate. And I guess, let's see, I think I was sort of a little quiet, as I'm told, as a child. And, you know, never wanted for anything, but I think I was a little lonely growing up. And that might have been the catalyst as I started to get a little older and enter my teens to really sort of, I had this idea of sort of being a part of something and always wanting to belong and you know, I guess maybe fill that void of loneliness that I had, you know, as a child. But I had a lovely upbringing, was educated fairly well, traveled a lot, which I think is the best education. And so no complaints there.
No, and I, you know, what I think is really important about what you said is that sometimes we can look at people from the outside in, and like you said, you did have a great childhood. You know, mm-hmm. You had two lovely parents who care very deeply for you, but still there was this part of you that felt a little lonely or wanting to fit in. Did you find that was challenging as well, being in the limelight to some extent? I know your dad's career was just starting, but being kind of under the microscope?
I always sort of had this notion that I had to live up to my family name. So whether that was in good form or bad form, I felt like I had to sort of always rise to the occasion and sort of park there. And so, you know, I think that I, at a certain point in my life, that was more negative. You know, as a teenager, I think there was a lot had to do with trying to understand myself and constantly wanting to test myself and push the boundaries. I was a wild boy, no doubt about it. And you know, who knows how much of that is nature versus nurture. But I was always sort of one that was pushing the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And so what age, in terms of pushing the boundaries, did you start finding yourself experimenting with drugs?
I think I was around 12 or 13, the first time that I smoked marijuana. And I don't think it was, I mean, I guess that's a pretty tender age. But at least in terms of like the peer group that I was in, it didn't seem out of the ordinary. Yeah, I think initially, you know, the using was, you know, sort of a part of fitting into a peer group. And then maybe that segued into realizing that, oh, maybe I feel a little more at ease, or, you know, a little more comfortable in this state of mind. And I think that that's a dangerous, I think that once your brain makes that connection, that's sort of a red flag, you know, especially when you're in your younger teens, because, you know, then it sort of paves the way for, you know, the how you feel is the best and easiest way to, you know, make your way through life, right? Because you sort of learn at a young age that, oh, this feels a little easier and feels good. And maybe I'll use this as sort of a crutch. And, you know, had I had this sort of awareness back then that I do now, and I think everybody feels the same in this respect, you know, things would have been a lot different. But that's, you know, that's life. That's
hindsight, 2020, right? Hindsight, you look back, you can see it. And, you know, I think when you said a lot of people, and I think a lot of young people get into that experimentation, it's not unusual. We're seeing more and more young people, you know, trying things and not realizing that it could eventually impact them. So how did you go from, you know, starting with marijuana and that leading you to cocaine? Was it something that happened quickly, or did you just begin trying different stuff? How did you end up there?
So I think at the time it didn't seem like it happened quickly, but, you know, looking back on it, I think it was maybe, I think the first time I tried cocaine, I was around 16. So 3 years is not very long. And 16 is a pretty young age, I think, to be experimenting with hard drugs. And, you know, I think one of my characteristics, and still to this day, which can be, you know, positive or negative, is that I sort of dive into things head first, and then I figure out how to do it. Like, I dive into the deep end, and then I figure out how to tread water, you know, before I sink, you know. So mm-hmm. As I said, I think that that can be beneficial in a lot of ways if it's focused properly. But, you know, in that regard, in terms of, you know, that lifestyle and fitting into, you know, the peer group that I was a part of, which over time, you know, became a little bit rougher and a little bit, you know, more carefree, and you know, it's not the best thing. And what I learned about myself is that, and I give this advice to people, is, you know, it's just sort of fake it till you make it. You'd be surprised. Sorry about that.
You're a popular guy, Cameron, so we know people are trying to reach you. No worries at all.
We'll go back here. Here's our gloves. See if you can help me out with this. Turn this off here. Okay.
Go to the bottom, find Chrome.
Sorry about this.
Okay, Cameron. You know, just kind of recap for the audience. I know you're a popular guy. You said people were calling you and stuff.
That was actually my mom. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
So now you can tell her, Mom, I'm doing a live. You got to come watch it now.
Come on, Mom. You gotta give me a little space here. I'm trying to take care of this. No, it.
She's, but you were, you know, you were sharing at 16, like you were the kind of person who kind of dove in and then figured it out later. So, you know, what's interesting to me is when you tried cocaine, you're 16, did you ever imagine that that would take you on the path of destruction that it did?
No, I mean, of course not. But you know, to a certain degree, you know, looking back on it all, I think there was a certain level of like, I was just, you know, again, and I don't know, you know, this is, everybody has their own journey. And I don't know if I was destined to have this journey or what, but I sort of was on autopilot after a certain point, you know, where like, I really was not open to a lot of helpful advice, you know, from people that loved me and cared about me. I was just really sort of focused on you know, where I was at in the moment and what I was trying to achieve in that moment. And I think, you know, again, that's a, you know, a double-edged sword. I think that that can be helpful in a lot of ways if it's utilized properly. And, you know, and I think a lot of traits and characteristics that individuals have, you know, it's a matter of how you utilize that trait or characteristic, you know, that that makes it either positive for you or negative.
Mm-hmm. Which I can understand what you're saying with that. And we've actually heard that before, because there are so many things that people who, you know, are passionate in many areas, but when it's geared towards the wrong areas, such as, you know, drugs and things like that, then we see lives that, you know, end up out of control. Did you find that at some point your life was starting to get out of control? And what did that look like?
Yeah, I think my idea of out of control was different than most people's idea of out of control. So I think, you know, while most people, you know, would have, you know, thought that I was out of control, I might not have felt that I was out of control. You know, and
did you?
No, I didn't. I don't, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know if I ever felt that I was out of control, although, you know, obviously that's up for debate. But I always, and this is, you know, this is actually a great conversation. This is another great example of being open to hearing what the people around you that love you are sort of experiencing. And, you know, because, you know, sometimes you don't always have the best perspective, you know, because it's clouded by, you know, different things that you're going through. And if it's addiction, then that really, you know, muddies the reality of what's going on in one's life. So it makes it even more important to listen to what the people that love you are thinking. But it's just a difficult, you know, this is why addiction is so difficult to deal with, you know, because it's like the sort of scenario where, you know, you're seeing one thing and your actions and what everybody else is observing is something totally different, you know, and as that addiction, you know, gets its hooks into you deeper and deeper, you know, that really starts to become the focus, you know, feeding that addiction. And when that is the focus, then everything else is going by the wayside. And, you know, and as I'm talking, I'm sort of thinking about different points in my life. And you know, certainly I would say that when I got into the teeth of my cocaine addiction, which is when I was injecting it, I would say that I certainly realized that things were out of control. I think at that point and towards the end of that. But I guess, you know, you're always telling yourself like, okay, well, I'm gonna get a handle on this, and it's gonna run it back and make everything okay. And that's just the rationale that they talk about all the time.
Rationalization. Because, you know, I wonder, you know, we hear a lot of people being in denial. Why do you think it was so difficult to realize what was going on at the moment and how bad things were beginning to spiral?
Well, I don't know. At that point, it's not a matter of how difficult it is to realize what's going on. It's a matter of, do you want it to continue, or are you ready to let go of it? You know what I mean? And if you're not ready to let go of it, then, you know, as we all know, you're going to continue at all costs. And that's what it ends up being. And that's why, substance abuse is so destructive, you know, because, you know, you reach a point where you're all the way in and everything else is just sort of in the periphery. And that's just not productive. You know, there's nothing productive that's going to come out. There's nothing productive that's going to come through that addiction. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's that's the big, you know, moment where you've just been realizing that you've just been shooting yourself in the foot, you know, for all these years or however long it's been that you've been living in that way.
And, you know, it was interesting. I was telling a friend that I was interviewing you, and I mentioned that, you know, in the height of your addiction, which we mentioned, that you even, you know, resorted to drug dealing to, you know, deal with your problem or to feed your habit, should I say. Do you find that people don't realize that when you're in the throes of addiction, oftentimes people do things that are out of character?
Completely. I think that's probably addiction by its definition. You know what I mean? I mean, you're just not really, you're totally out of character. You're yourself, but you're in the character of, you know, whatever this substance is sort of shaping you to be. And that's certainly, you know, happened to me. You know, I allowed myself to be molded by, you know, the lifestyle that I was leading, and just, you know, my nature, as I said, is to sort of, you know, constantly trying to push the bar. And, you know, that can be healthy, or on the flip side, it can be completely detrimental. And it was, but at the same time, I would also like to believe, and I can't really give you a definite answer one way or the other at this point in my life, but I would like to believe that, you know, we get to a point in our lives, if we can survive, and we realize that we're fulfilled, that we're inspired, that we're healthy, that we have this sort of breadth of wisdom and experience. And none of that is possible without, you know, some of the mistakes and choices that you made, you know. So, and who's to say that you would ever even be in that place of happiness, or whatever that means, that means different for everybody, or contentment, without having made those choices. That's, I don't know. You know, that's just.
So are you saying, Cameron, to some extent that you don't necessarily regret going through that because you feel it made you the man you are today, the strong person you are today?
Well, regret, that is sort of broad. You know what I mean? There's tons of things that I regret or wish that I would have done differently, but I can't necessarily tell you at this point in my life, mm-hmm. whether, you know, that was all just, you know, for not, you know, maybe it did allow me and give me the experience and the wisdom that I needed to move forward in my life. Now, hopefully people don't have to take it so far. I think that's the idea, you know, but I was somebody that was pretty bullheaded, and it wasn't much that you could tell me. And anything short of, you know, where I landed myself probably would not have done the trick. And now, that's not to say that I would never sit here for a second and say that I think prison is the answer for addiction or this and that, but certain experiences allow for you to gain a perspective that you need to start making some changes. And that's just happens to be where I landed.
So you're saying, was it prison for you, Cameron, that kind of was that light bulb moment for you to get the perspective?
I think it was just the combination of different events and realities in my life. And probably a lot of it had to do with, you know, thank God, you know, I think I reached a point where my priorities really started to shift, you know, where once my priorities were sort of wrapped up in my addiction and in the lifestyle and what that brought with it, and where I realized that those were not my priorities anymore. Those were not things that inspired me anymore. Those were not, you know, I looked around in my surroundings and, you know, and just realized, you know, that there was something different. And
was it like a light bulb moment or like an epiphany, Cameron, or was it something that over time you kind of came to?
No, it was a process. Okay. It was a process, you know, it was a process of living and growing as an individual and sort of, you know, maybe gaining some clarity. I think certainly, you know, the absence of, you know, hard drug abuse on a regular basis allows for some clarity. And I think that that's, you know, one of the most important things that an individual can gift themselves, especially if they're in the throes of addiction. But the reality is that, you know, people come to this point at different times. And as we all know, many of the best of us never reach that point, you know, mm-hmm. And that's just a sort of reality of what we're dealing with, you know? So I finally reached that point, you know what I mean? And I'm grateful for it.
I think that's huge what you're saying, because like you said, we're seeing so many people that are still struggling. And this is one of the things I really wanted to point out about your story, Cameron, too, is that how many years were you in the throes of addiction before you got there? Because I think that yours is a story, as I mentioned before, of hope. How long was that process? How long was that time frame before you started that process of transformation of your thinking?
I mean, the reality is certainly before going to prison, it was more than half of my life, you know, which was an interesting thing about just fast forwarding ways, you know, coming home from prison and returning to my family and my close friends, you know, is that anybody that knew me well knew me in that way, because that is the way that I was for way more than half of my life up to the point that I left, you know? So I think it was, and I really just give so much credit. I don't know if that's the right word, but really just sort of in awe of the way love can allow people to really give you another shot, you know, to really see like, oh, is he going to be something different? Is he going to be taking care of himself, taking care of us, you know, or is it going to be this, what we're used to, you know? And I was really granted that through my family and my loved ones. And I was, you know, really just in, as I'm speaking to you about it, really impressed and grateful for that, because that's so important, you know, because I'll just speak for myself. I definitely came to a point where I think in some regards, I sort of started to lose hope. I think that's a fair way to put it. But the people around me, and even if they weren't around me physically, but just sort of in touch with me, family, friends, they never seemed to lose hope on me, whether they did or whether they didn't. They didn't seem like they did, you know, and certainly that at a certain point was enough for me to keep believing.
So, and how did they show that to you? Because I think that's powerful to have a family that, you know, seeing you go through heroin, cocaine addiction, then spending time behind bars, you know, as we talked about, also dealing with drug dealing. But through that whole process, your dad, your mom, your siblings staying in there with you and never giving up. How did they express that to you? How could you feel that from them?
I mean, I think in a certain way, they knew me better than I knew myself, I guess, which is interesting. I just had that thought right now as I'm speaking with you. And they refused to write me off. Mm. And I think that for me was powerful. It was like medicine, you know, for me, in that, you know, if they hadn't written me off, then maybe I shouldn't write myself off.
Wow. Whoa. The fact, I mean, listening to that, Cameron, it just, something about it, just the fact that your parents and your family not writing you off gave you enough of a belief in yourself when you said, here I am giving up hope, but their hope kind of carried you and their love kind of carried you through that process. So when did you realize that you were coming on the other side of this? When did you realize? I know you said this was a process for more than half of your life. You were, you know, struggling with this addiction, but what was the moment that you started to say, I'm coming on the other side of this? I can see light at the end of this tunnel.
It's a great question. And for me, I'm taken directly to this specific time in my life when I'd been in prison for about a year and a half, and my prison sentence was doubled. It went from 5 years to 10 years. Mm. And I went back to court to be resentenced. And at the time I was in solitary, I guess is what most people would know it as, even though it's only solitary under the luckiest of circumstances. But and I came back from court and I just felt sort of something, there was all kinds of stuff going on that range at the time, little riots, flooding, all this stuff. And I got back to my cell and I sort of felt something inside of me shattering, you know, a sort of feeling that I'd never felt before. Not that I went to pieces outwardly, but inwardly, I felt something significant breaking. And that ended up being a very positive feeling for me, because that was sort of breaking the mold that was not serving me, you know, the mold that that I had been utilizing for many years and had gotten me, you know, in that position. And I sort of made this agreement with myself. I sort of realized at that point that there were sort of two roads that I could go down from there. One would be negative, in that, you know, I could have just gone off the rails and very easily maybe never made it home. And the other one sounded a little more palatable to me and inspiring. And that was that I made a promise to myself to utilize each day in putting myself in the best possible position once I was released. So in other words, each day I would use as an exercise to grow and build myself as a person. And just a little shift in perspective like that was enough to sort of get me up out of my rack every morning, was enough to get me, you know, putting this curriculum together for myself, you know, reading, educating myself in areas that I was interested in, writing, exercising. And just sort of, it was like that light coming back into my soul of like really loving myself, loving oneself, that idea of like self-care, you know what I mean? Like, you know, what is my purpose today? My purpose today is to become a better person, to become a stronger person, to overcome these obstacles and grow through them. And so again, like just this shift in perspective started to gain momentum. And over years, you know, I started to really make steps and make positive changes. It did not happen overnight, but it was at that moment that I was able to gain that perspective. And that perspective, you know, has served me well.
So Cameron, when you think about the young man who went into prison and the young man who came out of prison, how were they different?
young man went into prison. Wasn't such a young man coming out, but I appreciate that. but how they're very different. I mean, you know, my spirit, you know, my heart, my sense of humor, you know, this is all, you know, stuff that's will always be in me and has never really wavered too much. It's just, I utilize it, these beautiful traits now, for growth, you know, and creating things and showing up for people that I love and showing up for myself, really, first and foremost. You know, I often say, and this is sort of cliche, but, you know, I really did sort of go in there like a kid. You know, I was 29, so, you know, that should be grown up by then, but I was definitely still a kid, you know, in terms of the way that, you know, I was looking at things and approaching things and really came out, you know, a man.
And what was the time frame that you were in there during this time?
8 years. Yeah. 8 years on 10-year sentence.
So do you remember what it was like, Cameron, coming out? As you said, you grew up kind of in prison, had this, you know, moment of self-reflection to yourself and knew that you wanted to change your life. So what was it like that first year coming out and rebuilding?
Super difficult, super difficult. And was for, you know, a handful of years after being released. And that is not something that I had really planned for. You know, I thought that, as I think many individuals do, that when you're, you know, when you're granted your freedom, so to speak, there's still a lot of other sort of hurdles that you have to deal with for years. But, you know, you're not, you know, behind a wall anymore. You feel like all your problems will be solved. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, it's a process, and that's what life is. Life is a process, you know, and we make decisions and we live in those circumstances.
Sorry to interrupt you there, but
that was a curveball for me. That was just a new reality, and sort of I have my sea legs, and it took me a few years to really, you know, find my, you know, my groove again, and, you know, figure out as I, you know, and it makes sense, really. You know, I went in as, you know, sort of as a kid and came out, you know, different. So it's like, how do I like to express myself through music, through clothes, through fashion, you know, all these sort of things that now are going to be a little different because I'm just seeing things a little different. But it's a challenge. It was challenging for me.
Was it hard not to go back to the drugs?
No, that part gratefully was not as challenging. And again, I was worried about that because, you know, even myself, you know, I know myself and I know how I operated for most of my life, you know, before I went away. So as you know, the days got closer to being released, I was like, you know, I felt stronger. I felt like I had the discipline that I was lacking. I felt like I had the focus. I felt like my priorities were in the right order. I felt like I had all this stuff. But again, you know, it's one thing to, you know, see it that way and sort of have these ideas of what you want to expect. And then it's another reality in the practical sense, you know, but I was pleasantly surprised to realize that that was not a big issue for me. I think, you know, if I really just want to distill it down to something very simple, it was the simple fact that I was not inspired by that life anymore. I wasn't inspired by that life. I wasn't inspired by where it took me. And I wanted to be inspired. I want to be inspired. I'm an artist, you know what I mean? And I want to be inspired. It's just sort of the soul that I have. And that was kind of like been there, done that. Now I like to, you know, experience something new and interesting.
I love that. You know, one thing that I did think about as we kind of go from your wisdom from all of this. Was it hard living this out in the press? Because I know many of us who see you, we know you, and of course, know your father, Michael Douglas. Did that make it more challenging trying to rebuild and having to deal with what everybody had seen, where a lot of people get to do that, you know, in hiding or in secret where no one knows?
I think it's, again, it's a matter of perspective. I think I chose to utilize that as a reality, as a tool, you know, for me, in that, you know, I did not want to, you know, fall back on my face, you know, and just for me myself, but also for, you know, for my loved ones and, you know, I have kids and everything like that. So the idea of you know, regressing and going back to the same old thing after all that I had you know, gone through and, you know, put my family and loved ones through was just not a possibility for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I utilized that sort of reality as a tool. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas it might have been easier. It might have been something I would have considered more, you know, had I, you know, had complete anonymity. I don't know.
But also you didn't hide. What I think is so powerful about you, Cameron, and shows who you are, is that you didn't hide. You were like, you know what? I'm going to rebuild my career. I'm going to go continue acting. I'm going to get back up. I'm going to be an active father. It's like you didn't let that and what people might think hold you back. How did you get to that mindset of being able to move in that way?
Well, you know, when we started talking, I said, like, you know, there's certain traits and characteristics that I have, and you know, that's the flip side. That's the positive side of that coin, you know, is when you utilize those traits and characteristics for, you know, something positive, for growth. And that's just sort of my, you know, that's just one of the things about me, is that, like, I'm tenacious, you know, and I think tenacity is a very important and helpful trait in life in general. But certainly if you're digging yourself out of a hole, you know what I mean? And for me, if I fail, you know, in certain things, you know, I fail, that's fine. You know, figure something else, or maybe, you know, maybe that failure opens another door for me, but it's not going to be from, like, fear. You know, I'm not going to just, like, you know, hide from, you know, what may or may not be. Like, I want to find out if it's still there for me, you know, and that's, and my kids in the background is coming home from school. And that's the way, you know, at least as far as my career is concerned, you know, I'm like a pit bull in that way. I felt that there was meat on the bone still. So I'm on it. You know what I mean? If there's no meat on the bone, then I'll let go and figure something else out. But I want to challenge myself and be up to the task.
Well, I just have a few last questions for you. First of all, I hear the kids in the background. So what is it like now being able to show up for your children and be there and have children and experience kind of what your parents may have experienced with you, just having that?
I mean, you know, I think every parent could probably answer for me, you know, and certainly relate. And it's just, I mean, you know, every day you love them more and more, which is incredible. You know, like, you just get these little looks from them, or these certain connections, or these little moments when they're understanding, you know, they can, I mean, just amazing how fast they develop and understand. I swear. And it's also just such a great inspiration, and also real, like, just selfishly, it's medicine for me, like, for my soul. You know, like, I need to be around them. It's just, it's healing for me. So grateful.
Well, one thing I also wanted to walk away with on this, two last things. One, what are three things that you hope people learn from your story?
Three things.
I know you got a lot. You probably got 80 over there, Cameron. I can see your mind going, but, but I'm thinking if there's, like, three or four things that you would share that you hope would be lessons, or that people would take away from your story or your experience.
I think you got to find a way to, this is first and foremost, I think you got to find a way to respect yourself above all else. And I really mean that, you know, because when you respect yourself, then you have the ability to respect the way you take care of yourself, respect the way you take care of the people that you love. And so I think that that respect has to be in place. I think that it's also extremely important to find a sort of, figure out whatever sort of foundation for yourself that allows you to have some stability. You know, for me, it's sort of like a trifecta. It's meditation, exercise, and then inspiration, you know, with my work. Thirdly, I would say that it's never too late, man, to change. You know what I mean? As long as you're still breathing, and then you can make some changes. And it starts with one, and then two, and then three, and then, you know, it's a matter of, you know, what you really want. And the reality is that it doesn't matter how many people want it for you. It just doesn't. Yeah. You know, it'd be easier if that held more weight. But it just really comes down to what you want for yourself. You know what I mean? And I think finding some clarity surrounding that makes it easier to follow up on.
And you seem really happy now. You seem like you're living the life. You got your kids in there. You're doing your acting career. So what is next for you, Cameron? How can we follow you? And what upcoming projects are going on? I want to hear all about it.
You know, I just to respond to what you said initially, I certainly am happy and I am grateful. And there are a lot of things going on, but there are also a lot of, you know, things that, you know, I struggle with and deal with on a daily basis. And that's life. You know, that's never going to disappear. It's not like you're going to, you know, at least for me, in my experience, you're going to reach this place where, like, everything was kind of like the idea of, like, stepping out of prison. Everything is going to be just great. You know what I mean? No, that's just not the way it works. You know, so it's, you know, it's a process. You know, everything is a process, you know. But if you're healthy, if you have love in your heart and soul, and if you're inspired, then you know, you work through it and you utilize the things that you're struggling with to become better, smarter, more capable. So having said that, developing a couple different projects right now with some really talented writers that I enjoy working with. And as far as acting goes, I have a film that I'm starting in June called Blood Knot.
Heard about that. Okay. Yeah.
Looking forward to that. I was just in this series of The Crowded Room with Tom Holland that I think is coming out soon. And just, you know, staying after it. But, you know, it didn't, you know, I had this idea that I was going to, again, touch down and just, you know, take the world by storm, sort of, you know, and all the faculties were there, you know what I mean? The mindset, the health, everything. But, you know, that's just not the way life doesn't always work, you know, on our timetable or what we think is the right time. And maybe there's a reason behind that. So I say that to say that it's taken some time, you know, for, you know, to get some momentum going. And it's, and I think that in and of itself has been important for my growth, because I came to a point, you know, I was forced to ask and look at myself in the mirror and say, do I believe in myself and what I'm doing? You know, forget everybody else for a second. Do I believe in what I'm trying to do here? And that's an important question to ask yourself, mm-hmm. because the reality is, until you're making people a lot of money, there's not going to be a whole lot of people buying into what you're doing. So you got to believe in yourself. And then and lead from that place, you know. And
no, I love that.
Things fall into place.
Such good insight you gave us, all golden nuggets. And I had to just say one other thing. I know around the internet they're talking about how much you look like your daddy right now. How's that working for you? I said all around the internet. I know there's a buzz right now. You know, you were at a red carpet event about how much you look like your dad now.
Oh, really?
So how has that been in all of this?
I'm better looking than he is. Come on. He knows that. Everybody knows that. We could just put that argument to bed right now.
You're like, I'm the better looking one. Well, it is. Well, I love that. Well, it's been so good talking to you. And hi, he's so cute. How are you?
He's doing pretty good. He's got his little popsicle. Life is good.
Life is good. Well, Cameron, thank you so much for taking so much of your time to share your story with us. And for all of you joining us, whether you're watching this live or watching it on the replay, we hope that you've been inspired tonight with another episode of Addiction Talk. Good night.
Good night.